the Pacific in the Wake of Captain Cook with Sam Neill. Written by Megan Wilson Anastasius and read by Alan King. There's no doubt Cook knew how lucky he was to escape disaster on the reef, but he would never know the true extent of his good fortune. He'd unwittingly escaped another potential calamity when he landed on these riverbanks and managed to find the one spot on this part of the coast where local clans forbade the spilling of blood. According to the Gu'ugu Yimidia people, Walambao Biri was made when a coloured python rolled across the landscape and created the river and reefs. The place Cook landed, Wayambor, was where the clans met to conduct ceremonies and settle disputes. Alberta Hornsby. For the 32 tribal clan groups that make up the Gu'ugu Yimidia speaking nation, Wayambor was a neutral zone. Cook and his crew could have been picked off at any time during their 48 days here, but the law dictated that no blood was to be spilt on this land. Women went there to give birth. They settled their disputes. They performed their initiation ceremonies. They had celebrations there. They all shared in the resources of that area. Cook was very fortunate that these laws, indigenous laws, protected them. Because of the spiritual significance of the land where Cook set up his camp, the Gu'ugu Yimidia allowed him to go about his business. They didn't make contact with him until the 10th of July 1770, 3 weeks after his arrival. Over a period of 10 days, there were 6 meetings between Cook and his men and the Gu'ugu Yimidia people. And it was only the men. Although Cook and the crew saw women on the northern shore of the river, they never came over to the British campsite. Forced to focus their attentions on something other than the local womenfolk, the scientists made good use of their time on shore and their brief interactions with the Gu'ugu Yimidia men. While Banks and the naturalists collected flora and fauna samples, a 25-year-old artist, Sidney Parkinson, began to write down words from the local language. He also noted that the locals whistled when surprised. This list of words became part of the first written account of an Aboriginal language. Thanks to Cook's first voyage, over 100 Gu'ugu Yimidia words were brought back to England. When Governor Arthur Phillip embarked with the first fleet, he carried the list with him. Of course, Phillips was oblivious to the fact that there were hundreds of Aboriginal languages in use across the continent, and so the words would only be useful if he happened to bump into a local from Gu'ugu Yimidia country. As their time on shore drew to a close, the British found another way to highlight the chasm that existed between their view of the world and the belief systems of the indigenous people they'd encountered across the Pacific. Under Aboriginal laws, all land and all forms of life are sacred. The right to exploit natural resources is governed by rules that, in part, ensure sustainability. So when the men on board the Endeavour helped themselves to 12 turtles from a spot now known as Boulder Reef, the Gu'ugu Yimidia were apoplectic. Alberta Hornsby. It was the first time our men had been on board the Endeavour. What they saw didn't make them happy at all. There were 12 turtles, all weighing between 200 and 300 pounds, and they were taken off a reef that Cook called Turtle Reef. But it was not the right time to hunt turtles. It was actually a time for breeding, and at that time it was so rough and windy that our mob couldn't get out to the reef ourselves. They didn't do anything on the first day, but the next day they came back with a group of 10 men. They left their spears with some young boys and went on board the Endeavour to try and reclaim 2 of the turtles.